Hey, can you feel it? It's Monday. Can you feel the Monday? Does it feel like a Monday? It's Monday, February 24, 2025. This is the Hagmann Report. I'm Doug Hagmann. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in this platform. Thank you so much for all the people who support this platform. We could not do this without you. It's getting increasingly, I have to say this, it's getting increasingly more difficult. I'm just saying. What can I tell you? They have a lot of information to get into. I do want to thank as well the sponsors we have, including healthwithdoug.com. This is where you can find some great skin repair and protection. I'm telling you right now, a 2024 study found collagen supplements. They can boost skin hydration by 14%. Improve the elasticity of skin by 23% and reduce wrinkles by nearly 20% in 3 months, 12 weeks. Okay. This is, I'm telling you, your sign to use collagen to transform your skin from the inside out. And, you know, when you look at things, when you look at your skin, and some people bruise easy, some people cut easy, bleed easy, whatever. Some are thin skinned, you know. Build this up. Go to healthwithdoug.com/Hagmann, or healthwithdoug.com. I'm sorry, healthwithdoug.com. I've been using this amazing product for the past couple of years now, and I love the results. Unlike other collagen supplements, this uses the top five types for skin health. This premium collagen blend works together to help reduce visible signs of aging. It reduces wrinkles. And it does promote this youthful glow, or so I'm told, and it does promote elasticity and skin hydration. That I've noticed a whole lot of skin hydration. Excuse me. Now, folks, try it yourself. Start healing your skin. Place your order. Well, it's 51% off right now. Only at healthwithdoug.com. Plus, you're going to receive a free VIP live health and fitness coaching for life, a free ebook titled The 14 Foods for Amazing Skin, and a 60-day satisfaction guarantee and free shipping if you order now. Once again, this offer is only available at healthwithdoug.com, and I want to thank them for supporting this broadcast. All right. A lot of information to get into. Well, I'm sure you know right now the Dan Bongino, you saw that, right? Deputy director of the FBI. I'm sure you know that. I got a lot of emails, and I talked to a lot of people. Usually the people that listen or watch this show also watch the Dan Bongino show. So I'm not going to play the first, he comes out and he explains it in the first three and a half minutes. You can watch that at your convenience. It was a pretty emotional time. But the news behind this is that there will be some forward motion. Trust me when I tell you this. This decision was not decided lightly. I'll tell you this. The deputy director is the man. The director, Kash Patel, look, he's got the final say in things, but he's more of a politician. I don't really want to say that. He is, he doesn't take care of the day-to-day operations. The deputy director is responsible for that. All right. So think of it that way. So Dan Bongino is going to be calling a lot of the shots in the field offices, a lot of the investigations. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's an important position. And I don't think it was done lightly. Now, some people say, well, you know what? This is going to have Kash Patel is going to perhaps at some point go over to ATF, which is now under his control. And Bongino will be then acting director of the FBI. I've heard that in the left circles, you know, the talking heads on the left. I don't believe that to be the case. I believe that the effective 1-2 punch is the Bongino Patel grouping. I don't know what you folks think in the chat. Your thoughts, man. I'd be very interested to hear or see. And I'll tell you this: if you've watched any part of Dan Bongino, any part of his show podcast, which, by the way, he's walking away from the number one. Look, I don't know how many millions he makes. Okay. Nor do I really care. But the fact of the matter is he's walking away from a really incredibly well-paid gig to do this. Just saying. Will it affect his lifestyle? Nah, I don't know. But I am really excited to see this, and I think it's going to really make a difference. Don't forget, I was supposed to make this announcement earlier. Don't forget, tomorrow night, the first, between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m., I'll be on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. That's 1 a.m. Eastern to 3 a.m. Eastern. So for your truckers out there, or insomniacs in the East, or in the Midwest, hey, tune in. Say hey. All right. You know, right now we are in this really kind of a very weird, this weird era. This weird, well, can you feel it? Again, that has never been so multi-useful than today. There's something in the air. There really is. I want to show you this. This is cut two. It's only a minute long. And the first part of this video is a little bit hard to hear. But to kind of set the stage a little bit for what's going on domestically, and I'm going to be getting into domestic and then foreign. And tomorrow I got a very special show for you. I believe Randy Taylor will be back tomorrow, so yay, right? For all of those asking. But will be joining me tomorrow. Tomorrow? Yes. Okay. But I want you to take a look at this. Again, when you look at things happening on the domestic stage, and then you look at things happening overseas and then internationally intertwined, there are a few things taking place. This kind of has this. Well, you got to see this, and then I will explain why I wanted this played. I debated, and I thought, well, now I'll show this. This is from a TikToker. It's a female. A little hard to hear in the beginning. And she's calling for Elon Musk to be assassinated. I mean, have you seen this? People in chat, have you seen this? Well, if not, here it is. And if you have, I'll check it out again. Cut two.
I promised myself I would avoid the news. But obviously I haven't. Here's my one thought. I mean, I have many thoughts. Elon Musk, like, when you X him, and by X I mean formerly known as assassination, I know someone from FBI is gonna fucking show up. I don't arrest me. You don't have enough people to even investigate me at this point. I haven't filed my taxes in like 8 years, and yet no one's covered me. So I'm gonna fucking say it. Let's assassinate some motherfuckers.
Nice mouth, right? She comes right out and says, Ed Martin from the Department of Justice was informed of that video, and he said, yeah, we're looking at this. Hey, she's going to get what she asked for, I guess, right? Some attention. Seriously. And then she's going to cry about that. Okay. But that's the mood on the left, right? That's the mood on the left. That's the mood of the left on the left. Especially this weekend, Joy Reid lost her show on MSNBC. Lester Holt, bang, he's out of there. MSNBC or NBC's kind of restructuring things. Joy Reid was crying for a couple of minutes, I think a 3-minute video. I don't know if I have that in the show prep. 3 minutes of Joy Reid is about 2.5 or 2:59, too long. But that's just the way it is, okay? Now, that was the let's just kill everybody. Or let's just kill, you know, Musk and kill the right. And I've seen so many of these videos. So many of these videos. And then you've got the one-offs. And I don't even know how to explain this. I really don't. And maybe you can tell me how to explain this. Let me, again, I didn't put these in order, but explain this to me. Dan Crenshaw. I got so many show notes, so much in the show notes today. It's hard to really keep track. Eric the Tech. Oh, it's cut one. That's why I couldn't find it. Cut one. Dan Crenshaw. This is only 11 seconds long. Explain this to me and what this is all about, if you don't mind. Here it is, 11 seconds.
Oh, this, have you ever met Tucker?
Since I blabbed over that, this is an open mic moment. If you want to just run that from the start, this is Republican Representative Dan Crenshaw in an interview. Again, explain this to me. Go ahead and run that from the start.
Have you ever met Tucker?
Okay. The question was, have you ever met Tucker, meaning Tucker Carlson? Crenshaw replying, of course. Basically, they've spoken not much, but if I met him, I would effing kill him. You see what I'm getting at here? There's something in the air. There's something not right about things. There's a lot of animus out there. There's a lot of hatred among people. You can see it. You can feel it. When I read even the open source message boards on the left, the hatred is off the charts. The threats. I don't think if you had 1,000 people, 1,000 agents dedicated just to the threats. I'm not sure you can keep up with the threats, especially by the left. And the rhetoric is ratcheting up, really on both sides, but especially on the left. What's this all about? This weekend, I saw a video clip, to me, resonated with me so, I mean, it hit me right in the solar plexus, man. I mean, it was like, yeah, this is exactly what we are experiencing today. You know, people talk about the Trump revolution. It ain't that. It's not a revolution. What is it? It's a counter-revolution. Very good. Counter-revolution. You know, Victor Davis Hanson was very kind to appear on this show quite some time ago. And he's one of the smartest men I've ever met in history. And if you read any Victor Davis Hanson columns, Substacks, whatever, I mean, you can gain a lot of information from that. Well, he put out a video. This is the best summary, I think, of President Trump and where we are today. Okay, this is not a revolution that we're seeing. This is a counter-revolution. And if you have to, you kind of should go back and think back to the founding of this country. And think about how we dealt with the British. And then later on, you know, with the War of 1812 and moving forward domestically. Think about how we dealt with all of this. And you know, the other thing too, our founding, you know, I mean, Alexander Hamilton and Burr, I mean, hey, Hamilton lost the duel, okay? Things were pretty nasty at you know, near and after our founding. It wasn't all daisies and roses and puppy dogs and, you know, no. And we had a lot of stuff happen in our 250 years, right? But Victor Davis Hanson, I must have listened to this four or five times because he nails every part of this. Now, this is a long video. I'll probably split it into two parts, so you don't think you're, or somebody might come on and think they're at the wrong show. I might do that. Okay, I'm known for playing long clips because I like the context. I mean, but I digress. Let's go right to this is clip 7 in the show notes. And by the way, I must have got 4 emails. I guess I'm not doing a good job in explaining to people. Where can I find the show notes? Well, folks, go to HagmanPI.com, 2 N's on HagmanPI.com, and find the episode that you might be looking for. If it's today, it should be on top. Again, only at HagmanPI.com, and click on the title, and that'll bring up the entire page. And within that page, under the audio, we'll have everything I'm referencing here. Sometimes more. Little surprises in there. This is cut 7. This is Victor Davis Hanson. I urge you to listen to this. And then I urge you to go to the show notes. Copy the link and send it out to people because this makes a lot of sense. And then from here, it's going to get a little bit deeper because this to me really defines what's taking place. You saw the blowback, you know, with the evil going to assassinate Trump or Musk. Say it right now. I haven't paid taxes in 8 years. By the way, that's not me. And even Crenshaw, I'm going to effing kill him, to Tucker Carlson. To cleanse our palate, let's listen to Victor Davis Hanson. Here it is.
And they call it the MAGA revolution. It's not a revolution. It is a counter-revolution. There's a big difference. This is a restoration. Let's use the word Trump restoration. We don't really appreciate what we've been through with 8 years of the Obama revolution and the 4-year more radical third term of Obama using or employing the waxen effigy of Joe Biden. A revolution that we've experienced was a cultural, economic, political, social evolution. It was very similar to the French Revolution under the Robespierre brothers. We should remember what they tried to do. They changed the days of the week. They renamed things. They tore down statues. They went after the church. Does this sound familiar? This revolution that we've experienced, everything was up for sale. Everything was negotiable. We invented a third gender and rammed it down people's throats. We tore down statues. We said 1776 was no longer the foundational day. It was 1619. We changed the very mechanism that we vote. We went from 70% of the electorate voting on election day to 70% of the electorate not doing that, either through mail-in or early voting. That was a radical change that had no discussion. It was done by fiat. It was incredible. We looked at girls' sports and we destroyed it. We said that transgendered biological males that were now transgendered females could compete. They won over 600 medals they took away from hardworking female athletes. We had drag shows among young children. It was an effort to change the entire Constitution. We forget that. They were trying to bring in Puerto Rico as a state and Washington, D.C. to get four instant senators. They were proud. They said that they were going to pack the Supreme Court. Hadn't been tried since 1937. And it was an object of disgrace ever since, but they were proud to try it again. They talked about making states, the Senate look like the House. They wanted, and a lot of them were advocating, it was not fair that one senator in Wyoming, to take one example, is worth 250,000 votes, but a senator in California represented 20 million. They wanted to change the makeup of the Senate. They wanted to get rid of the Senate filibuster. Remember that. They wanted to bring back neo-Confederate nullification. 600 jurisdictions in the manner of South Carolina in 1832 are on the edge of the Civil War in 1860 when Confederate, neo-Confederate Southern states said the federal government's law does not apply to us. Tariffs, Yankee tariffs, no. We were going to override them. Andrew Jackson almost invaded the Carolinas over that, South Carolina. And so these jurisdictions said, federal law doesn't apply here. We're exempt. We have our own laws. You cannot, federal immigration law does not apply here. It applies everywhere else to you, but not to us. So this was a revolutionary movement. Movies were different. Sports were different. Take a knee. And Donald Trump came in, and it was not sufficient to say we're going to stop the madness of $37 billion. We're going to stop the madness of being short 40 or 50,000 military recruits because of this DEI coupled with the humiliation in Kabul. We're going to stop the appeasement of China. But that wasn't all. He said, the government is broke. We're going to go through all of these agencies. And finally, for the first time in the history of this country, when somebody says they're going to cut federal spending and drain the swamp or cut the administration, we're going to do it. And there's going to be no changing names except to go back to traditional names. And we're not going to topple statues. And if you break the law and you're on campus and you're on a student visa, you're going to go back home. So we're in the midst of a counter-revolution. It's not revolutionary. You know what it is? It's a return to normalcy. It's a return to common sense. It only looks revolutionary to revolutionaries. But to the rest of the people, it is a counter-revolution to restore normalcy and bring the country from the far left fringes back home again. House, they wanted, and a lot of them were advocating, it was not fair that one senator in Wyoming, to take one example, is worth 250,000 votes, but a senator in California represented 20 million. They wanted to change the makeup of the Senate. They wanted to get rid of the Senate filibuster. Remember that. They wanted to bring back neo-Confederate nullification. 600 jurisdictions in the manner of South Carolina in 1832 are on the edge of the Civil War in 1860 when Confederate, neo-Confederate southern states said the federal government's law does not apply to us. Tariffs, Yankee tariffs, no. We were going to override them. Andrew Jackson almost invaded the Carolinas over that, South Carolina. And so these jurisdictions said, federal law doesn't apply here. We're exempt. We have our own laws. You cannot, federal immigration law does not apply here. It applies everywhere else to you, but not to us. So this was a revolutionary movement. Movies were different. Sports were different. Take a knee. And Donald Trump came in, and it was not sufficient to say, we're going to stop the madness of $37 billion. We're going to stop the madness of being short 40 or 50,000 military recruits because of this DEI coupled with the humiliation in Kabul. We're going to stop the appeasement of China. But that wasn't all. He said, the government is broke. We're going to go through all of these agencies. And finally, for the first time in the history of this country, when somebody says they're going to cut federal spending and drain the swamp or cut the administration, we're going to do it. And there's going to be no changing names except to go back to traditional names. And we're not going to topple statues. And if you break the law and you're on campus and you're on a student visa, you're going to go back home. So we're in the midst of a counter-revolution. It's not revolutionary. You know what it is? It's a return to normalcy. It's a return to common sense. It only looks revolutionary to revolutionaries. But to the rest of the people, it is a counter-revolution to restore normalcy and bring the country from the far left fringes back home again.
That's a pretty good video. Doug has to reconnect. So Eric's sitting here just waiting for him. Let's go to... He's restarting his computer now. Sorry. He's texting me. Sorry, I muted my mic there. Now I'm unmuted. All right, Doug's popping in now.
So, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Eric the Tech, can you hear me? Eric the Tech. Paging Eric the Tech. Okay, sorry about that. Nothing like getting kicked off your own show. All right, this is going well. Everything kind of froze up on me, and I apologize. And my main system crashed, and well, you saw the rest. However ugly it was, and my apologies to those people watching on X and also on Rumble. These things do happen. We have to take it, you know, take it like a man. So that was Victor Davis Hanson. What did you think of his explanation? What did you think of his overall assessment of things? A palate cleanser? I thought it was. All right, let's get into really the meat and substance of today. By the way, there is a social media post going around where reportedly listening devices were found in the Oval Office. All right. I don't know whether you've seen this, and thank you, Kevin, for sending this. And I saw that earlier. I did reach out to someone. Apparently the community notes say, well, the desk, the Resolute desk is being, I don't know, fixed, repaired, cleaning up a mark on the desk from Elon Musk's son. Now, and that spurred the rumors of some type of listening device rumor. Well, that would not be necessary for, I mean, that just wouldn't happen, all right, in terms of removing the desk. Now, having said that, there's also
My apologies. I'm just getting some red notices over there. Now, having said that, that doesn't necessarily mean they didn't find them. But I reached out, and the story that's being given about the, they found listening devices in the Oval Office and hence the removal of the desk. That's not true. Okay, so on the other hand, that does not negate the possibility of them finding something, because they do, and this much I know, they do sweeps on a regular basis of the White House. You would be surprised of how efficient they are in both the Oval Office, the entire West Wing, as well as the residence, but I digress. I want to point this out. This is cut six. This is something that this falls into the kind of a strange category. This is a 2-minute clip. You remember the LA fires. You remember Karen Bass. And then how about the lieutenant, in charge of ground operations in LA during the fires? Her name was, she was a captain, Rebecca Marodi. Have you heard about this? This is cut six. This is cut six. Check this out. I'm going to put this out there with, maybe this is a result of a lover's quarrel as opposed to anything more nefarious, but the timing nonetheless is interesting, especially the way this captain and Karen Bass, as well as the fire chief, as well as especially because of their fighting between and among one another. But check this out. This is cut six.
Do y'all remember this woman, California Fire Captain Rebecca Marodi? Well, during the California wildfires last month, she was in the news quite a bit. One, for the tireless efforts she put forth trying to fight the fires, but also because she was called a DEI hire. Well, she's dead. She was found in her home with multiple stab wounds, and nobody's yet been arrested. Now, here's what we do know. She was off duty at the time of her death, and they believe that the person who did this to her was somebody she knew. They are ruling it as a homicide and saying that it could very much be part of a domestic violence attack. Now, when first responders arrived to the scene, it sounds like she was still alive. They began life-saving measures immediately, but ultimately she succumbed to her wounds and was pronounced dead at the scene. I can also tell you that they haven't named a formal suspect at this point in time, but they are looking for her wife, who they've not been able to find, locate, or have heard from. Anyways, this is something that I will try to keep watching, keep you guys up to date on. Make sure to hit that follow button if you don't already. Of course, drop your thoughts about this one in the comments. And if you don't follow me on my Substack or other platforms like Instagram, please do so.
Now, the credit goes out to that individual. And again, the link will be at HagmanPI.com. Anyone find that just a tad bit on the strange side? Anyone? Eric the Tech, I'm just... It's strange. Okay. You know, the one thing that I, from my investigative experience, you never try to force fit things like motives and even some curious timing. Okay, you kind of have to look at it and assess it, as opposed to say, wow, this would definitely be related. When you are in a homosexual relationship, whether it's two guys or two women, I'm telling you right now, the domestic violence levels is off the charts. So let's give that a while. But that wasn't too long ago that happened. And of course, it wasn't too long after the fires. So I'm just saying. And the chief suspect, of course, is, as you heard, her wife, which it's hard for me to even get those words out. Domestic partner, whatever you want to go. All right. Okay. So those are some of the things that show the evil stuff going on. Again, you know, there's the positive move forwards with Kash Patel confirmed, Bongino deputy director, really in charge of the day-to-day operations. You got Pam Bondi. You've got Ed Martin with the Department of Justice looking at people making the threats. You've got an enormous amount, number of threats out there against people like Musk and, of course, President Trump. And the threat against Trump has not gone away. The threat against Musk is rising on a really minute-by-minute basis. And the threat against pretty much everybody within the cabinet of our current president is a target. It's just amazing. And then you've got the ground fighting by Soros, funded in part by Soros, funded as well as by Gates and by others into NGOs through this maze of NGOs. But things are working. If you haven't seen this, you heard Victor Davis Hanson talking about the how we kind of got here, and he gave a pretty good assessment as to where we're at. You've got the states now kind of coming apart, certain blue states coming apart, and blue cities coming apart. But you've got capable, qualified people to handle this. Of course, Tom Homan, this is fantastic. In case you haven't seen this, I'm going to bring you up to speed on this. This is cut three. This is only 2 minutes. And this is Tom Homan's comments about Boston and the police department in Boston. The police commissioner, the police department. I'm going to tell you something. You don't want Tom Homan on your backside. You don't want him after you. This to me, you might have seen this. I think Alex Jones played a little bit, or played this as well. But I thought it important to play this because this is where we're at today. And think not just about his comments, but think about the opposition on this. And tell me if perhaps you might see something, maybe go kinetic within the cities, the blue cities, the larger cities, within the or at the border, perhaps. Just think about that. Here's cut three.
The fact of the matter is, the sad fact is, Democrats refuse to protect the American people. Thankfully, we have others. We have a latter-day Paul Revere, and borders are Tom Homan. We have a leader who will sound the alarm. We have a patriot who will go to Boston and every sanctuary city that have been misrun by Democrats. We have a White House that will no longer allow illegals to invade this country. We have an administration that will no longer allow illegals to overrun our hospitals, overcrowd our jails, and flood our schools that can't handle it. We have a president who will not allow America to descend into anarchy and violence. Listen to Tom Homan.
I read a story last night, the police commissioner of Boston. You said you doubled down on not helping law enforcement officers of ICE. I'm coming to Boston, I'm bringing hell with me. Numbers this morning, I stopped counting nine child rapists that were in jail in Massachusetts, where rather than honoring an ICE detainer, released them back into the street. You're not a police commissioner. Take that badge off your chest, put it in the desk drawer, because you became a politician. You forgot what it's like to be a cop.
Yeah. You forgot what it's like to be a cop. Tom Homan, I'm telling you, you don't want to irritate this guy. I've said this as we were leading up to the inauguration day. I said, Tom Homan is coming, and he's serious. He's going to shut this border down. He's going to clean this place up. He's going to send people home. He's going to arrest criminals. And if you try to play Sanctuary City games, a lot of bad things are going to happen. You're not going to get federal funding. And Tom Holman's going to come see you in person.
All right. So where are we at now in the show? So, okay. You saw, obviously, a citizen TikToker really peeved at Elon Musk, admits that she hasn't filed her taxes. And then, of course, on the other side, you have the DOJ response, Ed Martin, saying, okay, thank you, everyone, for letting me know about this woman. I'll be looking into this. Then you've got, again, this is kind of a recap. Then you got Crenshaw going after Tucker. Then you have some oddities, including the fire captain out in L.A. doing the ground operations, getting dead, ostensibly in a domestic battle. But we'll see, right? And then you have, again, in the words of Victor Davis Hanson, the counter-revolution. That really encapsulates all of those, right? Do you follow me on this? It kind of explains, to me anyway, it explains more that what we're doing is we're fighting, we're engaged in a counter-revolution against this communist takeover. Well, elements of that include the border. So you heard Tom Homan say, hey, you know, Boston, you're screwing with the law. I'm coming for you. Now, if you look at the numbers, if you look at the stats for arrests and deportations and such, it's, you know, is it great? Not really. We need to triple and quadruple and, you know, to raise that exponentially. But it's more than it was. And they're fighting, of course, they're engaged in lawfare. They're fighting every day they get up. They're fighting someone. And they're being assisted by the communists within this country, the deep state communist people in this country. So there's a battle being waged there. But again, this is a counter-revolution. The weight of that should, I mean, folks, please understand the weight of the counter-revolution. As it would be easier, obviously. The revolution, to me, would, and this is just my thought, would be easier than a counter-revolution. The counter-revolution is rebuilding what they, the globalist communist left, has burnt down, metaphorically, obviously, or in some cases in reality. Since I played the Homan clip, I want to play this clip. If you haven't seen this, and chances are you haven't seen this, here is a U.S. immigration attorney in Texas. Now, I met a U.S. immigration attorney in my hometown. It was a female, and she said, you know, I'm not even sure anymore. I can ask my clients who are calling me to come into my office because they'll get picked up. And some have. And she it doesn't break her heart. It was just a matter of fact statement. So there are things happening out there. And positive things happening out there. But then let's swing back over to the revolution side. Remember, this is the revolution side. This is not the counter-revolution. This is the revolution side. Let's swing back to a U.S. immigration attorney in Texas. He's vowing. This is crazy. He's vowing to ruin the lives of every law enforcement officer that dares uphold his oath of office. Think about that. I'm talking about the average cop that gets into a cruiser on a daily basis and does his job. But this is the pervasive attitude now, and I hope this is the groundwork that you see. This is cut five. It's only 2 minutes, but in that 2 minutes is packed a lot of threats, hate, and actually, as I delved into this, if you are a member of the bar in the state of Texas and you encourage people to break federal or state law, or if you engage in any kind of attempts to intimidate a law enforcement officer, you can lose your license to practice law in the state of Texas. Think about that when you watch this. This is cut five.
Here's what's going to happen. You're 25 years old. You're in the prime of life. You just pinned on your star and you've gone to work as a Texas lawman. And you couldn't be happier. You made it through your academy. You made it through your field training. You finally got your own patrol car and some supervisor or maybe a Texas Ranger hands a fellow off to you and tells you to put him in the back of your car and take him off to the jail and hands you a bunch of paperwork. And you're going to say, what do you do? And he's going to say, oh, that there's an illegal alien. And you're not going to think much of it because they didn't really dwell on this in the academy. You actually thought illegal alien was a thing. After all, you're not Border Patrol trained. But what should it matter? You're a real police officer. They aren't police officers. Yeah. And so you just innocently take them on down to the jail and you hand off the paperwork and you go to lunch and you haven't thought anything of it. But you shall have ruined your life. You're not going to know it right away. But with this clown show of criminals is done, when your stupid governor is gone, when this thing shakes out, attorneys are going to have that guy's case, and they're going to sue everybody who ever took custody of him unlawfully, and that's going to include you. And if it's me, I'm going to take every last thing you have. I'm going to enforce laws that have been on the books since 1868. You can't violate people's civil rights under the color of law. I don't care what you think you are now and what kind of authority you think you have. You're not above the law. Your orange antichrist is not above the law. Your dumb governor in his little wheelie chair is not above the law. I'm going to take everything you have. I don't care if it's just a trailer. I don't care if it's your dog. You will have screwed around and found out. Don't blame me. The law is the law. It's always been the law. Ignorance of the law has never been an excuse.
I tell you, you can take my trailer, you touch my dog, and we're gonna have some problems. But do you see what I'm saying here? Can you see where all of this is headed? Here we are. Look, we're in the throes of cold weather. We're in the throes of winter. We are in we're starting the fifth week of President Trump's rule. I mean, his executive mandates, his executive orders. He's got his cabinet laid out. You haven't seen anything yet. But do you see the pushback? The push and then the pushback. And the push is that counter-revolution. The pushback is from the communist left who refuse to let go of the reins of power. At what point, what's the breaking point here? Can we survive like this? What does history tell us? History shows that we've had some really nasty times, whether it's within the government or for example, the Civil War. The federal Federalist Party versus a Democratic Republican Party. Back in right after the founding, the beginning of the two parties here in America, and what that had given us. And it really never was meant to be that way, historically speaking. But when you look back in history, this is really nothing new. It ultimately turned kinetic, whether it was regional or national. For example, with Civil War, it did turn kinetic. And I'm telling you, that's where we're headed. That's why I'm really big on preps and everything. Okay. Then you have the people in charge. And when you look at the 535 congressmen and senators and members of the House, in total, 535, you look at their composition in terms of, are they, you know, far right, far left? Are they down the middle? Are they conservative? Are they liberal? Do they have dual citizenship? Are they allied with another country? Many have dual citizenship with Israel. And then there are others. But what are they doing? What are they accomplishing? And equally important, what do they think of you and I? You might say, I could care less what they think of me. Well, they represent you. So, you know, you should want them to carry out your wishes if you voted for them. And if not, we need to get rid of them by voting them out. But what happens when their hubris is second only to their wealth that they generated in their position? You go in at $174,000 a year, $200,000 a year. 2 years later, you're worth $90 million, or $4 million, whatever the case might be. You have people in there that can't even stand up. But what are they? Do they have your best interests at heart? And again, you may say, well, politics, it really doesn't matter. Well, no, it does matter. Laws matter. Ilhan Omar. I don't have the file on her. Ilhan Omar is a member of the House from Minnesota that should not be anywhere near the Capitol. This is what she thinks of you. This is cut 10. This is video 10. It's 30 seconds. You probably saw it. But in the context of tonight's show, think about where the various parts, the various components of what we're talking about are gonna end up existing. And who's going to be involved, and at what level, and on what side? Because it's coming. And this is just domestically. Wait until we throw our arms around the entire picture. Here's cut 10, Ilhan Omar, mocking you and me.
These people are just idiots. I'm at the point where it's become really hard to have an intellectual debate with any of these people, because the level of stupidity that they are displaying every single day is frankly embarrassing, not just in Congress, but as Americans. And the fact that these people are allowed to say just the most ridiculous things tells you that the dumbing of the United States has arrived, because how else do we get a Trump presidency again?
Now, that was in the context of a broader conversation about Elon Musk and about President Trump and about just a number of different things that are taking place right now. Again, she's part of the revolution. We'll say the Biden regime revolution or the Obama revolution. Or if you want to go even bigger than that, the deep state, the Illuminous Revolution, you get the idea, right? Oh, have I got a program lined up for you? Just putting that together, it's going to show you the components and, oh, man. But you've got that. Then you've got the infiltration. No, we don't have really. I mean, look, we know some people's ideology and they don't match up with ours. But wait a second. No, I'm talking about really bad infiltration. Not just in government, but in the private sector as well as the universities. Would this surprise you? Would this surprise you to know that the daughter of a top Hamas leader is a student at Georgetown and everyone knows it? Would that surprise you at all? It surprised me. Not in the way you might think. It surprised me, I guess, that you've got this woman who's the daughter. It would be like Hamas, obviously a terrorist organization, but it would be like, pick someone in high authority and they're studying over in Afghanistan, in their illustrious universities over there, right? It just, they would not allow that, but we allow it. But who allows it? Watch this. We're talking about Mafiz Salah. This is Cut 12. She's at Georgetown. And if this isn't indicative or illustrative of the infiltration in academia, I don't know what is. Yeah, I happen to think when I was doing this, and I was also just talking about this, I remember being on, speaking about being on Coast to Coast, I remember being on Coast on a Sunday night, and the host there, who's no longer there, it wasn't Art Bell, it was another gentleman who was filling in on Sunday night. So you folks in the chat might know this person. I'm not going to name him. He asked me to come on to comment about the piracy issues. This is back, I don't know, more than a decade ago. And of course, the Barbary pirates and all of that. What does it trace back to? It traces back to, well, there's an Islamic component to it, a Muslim militancy, a Muslim terror threat in that respect. And then this goes back to, my goodness, goes back to the origins of the U.S. Navy, right? And I remember him telling me, you can't talk about that. And I said, I am. I fought with him on air. Was never invited back for that by that particular host. But even back then, it was incredible. I just thought the whole conversation was surreal. But now we're at a point where we have to point out the infiltration, whether it's by a communist ideologue or a Muslim, or I don't care if their intent, if they have bad intent, or if they're associated with people with bad intent. We cannot afford to have these people in this country. So this is Cut 12. In case you haven't seen this, the threat from within, Cut 12.
A little bit of of a discovery made at Georgetown in the last week. There is a daughter of a Hamas leader attending Georgetown. And she not only is the daughter of the Hamas leader, she's a supporter of Hamas, the group that just killed a family and are sending the bodies home, little Kafir Bibas and his brother and mom.
Meet Mafezi Sana, a graduate student at Georgetown University's Center for Contemporary Arab Studies. She's also the daughter of Ahmed Youssef, who served as a top advisor for Ismail Haniyeh, Hamas's former leader. More importantly, Salah herself has served with Hamas, a US-designated terrorist organization. Astonishingly, her Georgetown student bio publicly stated that she worked with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Gaza. In Arabic language media, she's open about her role with the Hamas terrorist regime. She served on Hamas's committee to break the siege in Gaza, which happened to be chaired by her father. When Canberra reached out to Georgetown for comment, the university didn't respond, but promptly deleted Salah's bio. Salah has written publicly of her desire to destroy Israel. Just days after the October 7th massacre, she posted a propaganda video justifying the attack. She then expressed her joy about the massacre and glorified the terrorists who had just butchered Israeli civilians in their own homes. US anti-terror law prohibits the provision of material support to a designated terrorist organization. Salah's work with Hamas raises serious concerns. So why did Georgetown accept her? The university's decision to admit and harbour someone with a direct connection to and support for a terrorist organisation stands at odds with American policy. This disturbing situation calls for immediate investigation.
So the why, I think we can, I think we know the why, obviously. They of course, meaning the higher level academia, will allow those people in before the child of a farmer, before any American. There was a study there's a lawsuit. I think there's a pending lawsuit right now of an Asian American being denied admission. I think it was at Harvard or one of the Ivy League schools. And I just happened to catch this, where his GPA upon graduating was 4.4. Man, wow. From college, 4.4. And we wish that, right? I mean, had we worked hard back when, anyway. And his SAT scores were, I think, 1560. Incredible. And he was denied, again, Asian American, born in America, of Asian descent. But because he was Asian, he was denied entry into one of these Ivy League schools. But got a position, great paying position at Google. But I digress. But the fact is, we still have this going on, and it's going on at an incredible pace. So, okay, balancing this out, you have obviously two sides. Actually, more than two sides. You got multiple sides now converging. And really, this is about to go kinetic. But then you've got this morass. And I'm trying to lay this out in a way where if you sit down and if you think about this, and folks in the chat, let me know if I'm hitting the mark on this, or if it just sounds like a bunch of words kind of tumbling out of my mouth. But I'm trying to look at this as, okay, where are we at today? We know how we got here, more or less. We know that we've been in similar positions to this. But where is this going to end up? Domestically. And then we got some weird stuff taking place. But we have some people brought that. Now it seems like we're on the right track. But can we make it there in time? So all of these things I'm kind of tossing out and saying, well, wait a second. We're still infiltrated over here. We got some weird things happening here. You've got the left. You got the right. You've got these people that are intent on, I mean, you know, they want to kill President Trump. They want to kill Elon Musk. They want to burn everything down. And then you've got some really great people trying to clean up this mess. But then you've got things happening, and some will call them, well, those are distractions. Well, no, they're part of this full onslaught of attacks against our nation. And you've got this federal workforce for decades that have been unaccountable to anybody. This struck me as really important. You know that email that went out by Musk saying, what'd you do last week? And you've got to answer this by Monday at 11:59 a.m. I think it was, or maybe p.m. I don't know. List five things you did last week. Mass emailing. Now, understandably, Kash Patel said now to the FBI, okay, don't respond to that. You know, pause responses on that. That's fine. You've got the Department of State, Marco Rubio, saying, I'll take care of this. So you've got some responsible people in these very, very important departments, cabinets, but you have others, and these others are making a big deal about, well, why do I have to justify my existence? I'm not going to do it. And they're crying about it. I saw this. Representative Ralph Norman, and this is 40 seconds long, not a single government agency is occupying even one half of their office space. Think about that. Do you know some people have moved and they're still collecting a paycheck and saying they're working? Here's cut 13. Again, not a single government agency is occupying even half of their office space. Think about this on the broader scale of things. How much is this costing us? And how was this allowed to continue for so long? This is what happens when you don't have a leader or leadership at the federal level. Here's cut 13.
The price tag that the taxpayers pay is right at $271 billion a year. Is it too much to ask for them to verify why they're making an average salary of $106,000 a year? Do you think in the private sector that single mom who is working two jobs at a restaurant can't justify where she was, or the hygienist at the dentist's office can't verify what, you know, how many patients they saw? The absurdity and I guess the arrogance of the workers who says that's a heavy lift is what's wrong with that's what the Americans are sick and tired of. It's not their money. We're the ones who are paying the bills. We have a right to know.
Precisely. So we're also fighting this massive $36 trillion debt, the deficit, the budget, and you've got a workforce, a federal workforce that half aren't even sure. I mean, half the office space is empty, at least half. Well, what's the mood of the average federal worker? So I try to find out with precision, are most people okay with going back to work? Or do they see this as some sort of burden? I have to say, everything I looked at, everything I saw shows the latter. And it's best represented by cut 16 in the show notes. This is a federal employee who's absolutely infuriated that she was given 48 hours to list what work she did last week, and at the thought of having to work back at an office setting. You can't make this up. This is the federal government today. This is emblematic or illustrative of the federal government worker today. And to those of you listening who say, look, I work for the federal government and that's not me, my apologies. But the majority, I'm telling you that this is a majority. This is cut 16.
First, just tell us about this email and what it was like receiving it and what you all have talked about after getting it.
Sure. I got this email Saturday afternoon about 3 p.m. and I felt absolutely infuriated getting this email with a demand within 48 hours to provide a response on what I did within the last week or face termination. This is clearly an attempt from Elon Musk to harass and bully and intimidate the federal workforce, which is part of his broader plan to gut the federal workforce and privatize public sector services to ensure that corporations like his own can get more profit. And that makes me really angry, my coworkers as well.
Guess I got to turn my mic on. You okay with that? You okay with that attitude? I'm going to tell you right now, this is not where we should be as a country, as a nation, and really as a people. This is not where we should be. I want to show you one more thing here. This has to do now with the fight, the internal fight, the domestic fight that I referenced. Again, if you think of this as a counter-revolution, the irreparable damage that was caused by this last regime, by the Obama, Biden, Harris, by Comey, Brennan, the media, I mean, the irreparable damage to this country has created this boiling pot here that we face. And the open doors from the southern border, the northern border, the chemical warfare, and again, this is chemical warfare, this is bioweapon, whether it is the COVID or whether it's fentanyl, we're at war. So we've got our problems domestically, but we're also at war from other countries and cartels representing other countries. But you know what? The cartels have people in this country on their payroll. I could take you down to Arizona, and this is being worked on, by the way. I mean, this is being investigated, where some of the county officials are on the payroll in Arizona, in the border counties, as well as, I have to say, Texas, sad to say, on the payroll of cartels. And even at the state level, on the payroll of cartels. Oh, and I guess I should add, on the federal level, payroll of cartels. When I say payroll, I'm talking about, obviously they don't get a W-2 or a 1099. You get the idea. But then you look at what's happened in the last 30 days in this counter-revolution, and you say, okay, we're making progress, but is it fast enough? Well, here's one case in San Antonio that I think you'll find pretty okay. I think you're going to like this because it's not all bad news. There are things that are happening to push the counter-revolution against this communist infiltration. And this is one of them. And I believe we're going to be seeing more and more of this. This is cuts in video 8. Now, this is about 3.5 minutes. We'll cut it out about three and a half minutes. But you'll see what's taking place. And then I'm going to hit you with something else from earlier in February. That's going to have you thinking, okay, we are going to engage kinetically because I think it's unavoidable. First, though, here's cut 8.
It's done. It's over. Shut down. 4 years of torture. 4 years of insanity. Nightmare. The ARC is shut down. There's nobody here. The lights are off. Doors are closed, padlocked. No vehicles, no dirty NGOs in the parking lots. No illegals selling their products, their criminal products out in the perimeter. No pregnant Haitian women walking the streets of San Antonio. No Tren de Aragua anymore. Not one illegal in the perimeter of the American Replacement Center. There are no more dirty NGOs coming in and out. There is no more San Antonio Food Bank bringing in food that's supposed to be for the veterans and the homeless of United States citizens, bringing in for these people. Clothing, the millions of dollars spent on gray sweatsuits from Catholic Charities of San Antonio. No more of that. Food 3 times a day, cots, cable TV, health services, therapists, psychological therapists for these illegals that are experienced trauma crossing the border and going through a jungle into Panama. It's all been stopped. It's all gone. It's all ended at a price of $1 trillion. Once Doge finds it and Elon Musk does the investigation, you'll see the cost from all the way from Colombia and Panama, Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Mexico, through the United Nations funding, USAID, that the cost for this campaign will be easily over $1 trillion of your tax dollars. That all has ended. And I was here documented. We did not have to go through this. We did not have to do this to our own country. That was suicide. Suicide. It was genocide through invasion. And it stopped. Thank you, Donald Trump. We dodged the bullet. He dodged the bullet, literally, in his face.
Okay, you can cut it right there. The point is $1 trillion for treason. Mayorkas, by the way, where is Mayorkas? Biden, Obama, this is, and Bush, the Bush dynasty, Clinton, these, all of these people need to be held to account. And some of the members of Congress, the Senate, they need to be held to account. But with respect to the border, it was on February 6th, this next clip I'm going to show you, and then I'm going to get into the response to this. Todd Bensman said, look, the cartels, they're not just going to go away. Yeah, I'm kind of breaking it down for you. This will go kinetic. This is cut 4 in the show notes. And this aired originally on February 6, 2025. And we may have even played this back then. But listen to what he's got to say. And think about, and again, this is what, a week after 10 days? No. Whatever. After President Trump assumed office? Think about what he's got to say. His assessment of the southern and really the northern border, but specifically the southern border, and apply it to today. And then while you're applying it to today, think about what Tom Homan said about the Boston police commissioner giving the orders not to cooperate, and how many other cities are doing the same thing. And again, combine it into this big mixing pot to give you an idea of where we're at today. This is cut four. Things are going to go kinetic.
Stuff. So I think things are going to go kinetic. I have a source that's a really good source. I'm not going to obviously say it is. It's telling me that there is tabletop planning right now for the immediate future to using U.S. intelligence and certain Mexican units to go kinetic on narcotics depots, on fentanyl labs, and places like that. When that happens, I mean, get ready. There's going to be fireworks. That's just that these cartels are money hungry. They're brazen. They're incredibly well armed from, you know, making billions and billions of dollars on the human smuggling for 4 years. What do you think they did with that money? They invested it in arms, and they are armed up to the teeth. And they're not going to just sit back there and let lose their drug business. They're not without a fight. So I anticipate some fireworks.
So in the lower 48, we basically have cartel members in all of the lower 48 states. And this is what we're fighting against, obviously. Todd Benzman, who is really an expert, written a couple of books about the border, saying that, there will be, things will go kinetic. And you have to take a look as well as the Mexican president. I believe that she is perhaps, based on everything I've been able to really see, she's got some loyalty to the cartels, and I do suspect that she's on their payroll, because her actions don't match the words she's saying to President Trump. Yeah, we'll throw this token military military group up north. Okay. But yet, things have happened. More self-deportation has taken place than anything else because of President Trump's words and Tom Homan's threats. I mean, I believe more people have self-deported than have been deported by ICE at this moment in time. But you have this infighting in this country. So again, think about this in as a big picture, as this mosaic of events. That's really, to me, this is not just one issue. This, which is why, look, it's great that Dan Bongino is going to be the deputy assistant director of the FBI. It's great because we are going to get some stuff about the Epstein. By the way, this is not an Epstein, you know, address book. It's a client list. We're going to get stuff about JFK, RFK, MLK. How about the pipe bomber of January 6th? How about the weaponization of our Department of Justice? Absolutely. We're going to be getting answers in this counter-revolution. But there are people that don't want those answers to ever see the light of day. Before I go any further, I just want to say thank you again for your support. And thanks for thanks to the sponsors for their support. StayWarmNow.com, folks. StayWarmNow.com. It's colder than heck out there. Although we did have a warm-up. It's just above 30 now. So, you know, although some people, some places, hey, well below zero. go to staywarmnow.com. That's staywarmnow.com. Last summer, 2024, we saw a spike in power bills because of the extreme warmth. Well, now today, households are seeing the same problem in reverse, heating bills. And families are bringing attention to the exceptionally high heating bills they've received earlier this month that, hey, they're almost double of that of the previous month. The rise in utility costs are even forcing some to have to decide between paying for food, medicine, or their heating bill, which is why I use what you see on the screen there. In fact, I bought another one because they work so well. I use this amazing portable heater. Absolutely love how toasty warm it makes my house, my office, the studio. It's right over there. You can't see it, but it's there. It's small enough where I could take it anywhere, but powerful enough to warm up any place where you're at. You know, we can't warm up Buckingham Palace. Not that you would want to, but certainly the reasonable area that you're in. It includes also a built-in safety features like overheat protection and adjustable heat levels from just warm to really toasty comfort. Look, my family and I love this, and the lower heating bills, it's just icing on the cake. Do your wallet, do yourself a favor. Grab one up to 60% off this winter season only at staywarmnow.com. Plus, order today, you're going to get free expedited shipping, a 60-day satisfaction guarantee, and guess what? Several other goodies, free bonuses. That's staywarmnow.com. And again, I want to thank them for helping us offset our expenses. So, you've got this group of control oligarchs still in power, still behind things. And one thing that I saw, and I know I'm showing you a lot of video clips, but I figure they tell the best stories. I just do. Just take a look at this one. This is in the show notes. This is video 11. This is from Blaze TV today. And when I saw this, it made me stop and think about it and then find the video clip for this. On Inauguration Day, think about this. President Trump inaugurated 12 noon. 14 hours later, 2 o'clock in the morning, you have this, what would amount to members of the Doge group going into the Treasury Department and accessing their computers. Now, follow me on this. Again, because we're hitting a lot of things, and this is part of the mosaic. So here's what this told me. This told me that President Trump has known about issues within the government. And look, we all have, but I suspect he knew where to look. And I suspect that the Elon Musk component was developed, was cultivated over months, if not maybe a year. Before his election. And I do suspect that Elon Musk had found some of the best programmers, code work, you know, computer code people. So when he took office, he could deploy those people right away. And that's what this clip is about. And really, in Congress especially, that's what this fight is about. It's about power and money, money and power. But imagine this scenario. This is from an article, and for whatever reason, using keywords, and I couldn't find the article that they were referencing. But listen to this. The entire clip is like 10 minutes, okay? But if we play the first couple of minutes, you'll get the idea, and then you can watch the rest on your own. But man, think about how this played out. And again, counter-revolution, the push-pull right now, historically, what have we done historically? Has there been any other president ever to do anything close to what we're seeing? Believe it or not, one. You know who that was? Jimmy Carter. Of all people, it was Jimmy Carter. Back before the internet, he sent out questionnaires to federal employees, which never, I mean, everything tanked, so it did. He never followed up. The bureaucracy stopped all that. Quite ineffective. But this is different. 14 hours after President Trump takes the oath, the deployment of an elite group of coders, even white hat hackers, were dispatched. Well, I'll tell you what, they do a better job. This is Cut 11, and again, the whole thing is 10 minutes long. I'll stop it after a couple of minutes or have Eric stop it, but listen to this. This is really, really critical, I think, in the scheme of things. Here it is.
In the Treasury's basement at 2 a.m., right? This was on January 20th at 2 a.m.?
January 21st.
21st. Yep.
Okay.
Took them a whole day. The losers.
Their computer screens illuminated all the energy drinks in the room, and you can imagine there were several.
Sure.
Yeah. And as their algorithms crawled through decades of payment data, one number kept growing. $17 billion in redundant programs and counting. One of them said, we're in. We've got all of it. And he messaged the team on that. Edward Korestein's code had already mapped three subsystems. Then Luke Ferriter's algorithms were tracing payment flows across agencies. Their analysis revealed patterns that career officials didn't even know existed. By dawn, okay, keep in mind they started at 2 a.m., by dawn, they would understand more about Treasury's operations than people who had worked there for decades. This wasn't a hack. It wasn't a breach. It was authorized disruption. While career bureaucrats prepared orientation packets and welcome memos, Doge's team was already deep inside the payment system. No committees, no approvals, no red tape. Just four coders with unprecedented access and algorithms ready to run. So they've been planning this for, I don't know, a year or more?
Yeah.
Trump has been on this since he lost the last election.
What have we been saying, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is...
He was ready to go.
I guarantee you this is the kind of stuff they were talking about on the plane with the McDonald's or ringside at UFC. I mean, this is the stuff that Elon has been saying, oh, we could do this.
And they mentioned in the article, the trail led to staggering discoveries. We've talked about some of them. Programs marked as independent revealed coordinated funding streams. Grants labeled as humanitarian aid showed curious detours through complex networks. I mean, they've been at this
decades.
For probably a century.
Yeah.
Black budgets, once shrouded in secrecy, began to unravel under algorithmic scrutiny. Incredible. By 6 a.m., Treasury's career officials began arriving for work. They found systems they thought impenetrable, already mapped.
Incredible stuff.
Networks they believed hidden, already exposed. Power structures built over decades, revealed in hours. Their traditional defenses, slow-walking decisions, leaking damaging stories, stonewalling requests, all proved useless against an opponent moving faster than their systems could react. By the time they drafted their first memo objecting to the breach, three more systems had already been mapped. I love this.
And we just tweeted this out, at Pat Unleashed, if you want to check this out. This article gives you so much hope.
It's
from start to finish. I mean, these are quotes from it. An extinction-level event. A revolution in action.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a revolution.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeez. I mean, there's so much interesting here. I'm tempted to read the entire thing.
Okay, you can cut that right there. And it goes on. there are some more interesting things that are revealed, but you get the idea. So, and what he said, no, counter-revolution. Otherwise, I'm in total agreement. I mean, this was mapped out from the beginning. So the domestic side of things is a flipping mess. You can see that. And then, of course, the argument whether people should get a $5,000 dividend. Folks, in the chat, I don't know. Okay. There are pros and cons to a $5,000 dividend per family based on the savings, savings by Doge. I get that. But boy, wouldn't it be something to pay down the debt? But then again, we can do both because there's more graft out there. There's more money out there. And hey, I could use a $5,000. I can tell you that right now. As well as every one of you, I'm sure. So, okay. That's where we stand pretty much today. Throw in some liberal judges, communist judges, throw in some lawfare, throw in some more threats and angry people, people angry about having to go back to work. Throw in still an oppressive grocery store trip or two because the prices aren't coming down. And if you think about why, or if you research why the prices aren't coming down, it has a lot to do with the energy sector. It has a lot to do with respect to eggs. It has a lot to do with the mass culling of chickens. Why? Because they say it's because of bird flu. No, it's not. You heard Steve talk about this. It's because, look, they want us to starve. But that's a different topic. No, not really. I guess it's all part of the mosaic in this country. Now, throw out one more thing. Because we saw today, Emmanuel Macron, whatever, come to the White House. Was he met early this morning? Was he met by President Trump at the door? No, he wasn't. Did you notice that? He was met by a female representative at the doors to the White House. And of course, they spoke, had a meeting and a press conference and such, made nice, so to speak. But the issue, of course, was Ukraine. But how do we unravel Ukraine? This is going to be real. And how do we get to Ukraine? You heard me talking about 19, going back to really the fall of the wall in Russia. Of course, dealing with Russia, the fact that we promised not to extend NATO. This is the other thing we're dealing with right now. And this to me, this will play a part of this big pot, this big mosaic of things taking place. It's one of those aspects that I think could be tanked from both within by the deep state bureaucrats, but by the evil people like the Clintons, the holdovers from everybody from Bill Clinton forward. But listen to this. Now, again, this is a 10-minute clip, 11-minute clip. Only going to play a few minutes of it. This is Jeffrey Sachs explaining the Ukraine situation. Now, I like Scott Horton. I like his book, Provoked. It really goes in deep into exactly what Sachs is talking about here. But if you think about the fact that Obama, well, it started with, with Bush, Senior H.W. Bush, And it really amplified under Obama, during Obama's tenure with Victoria Nuland. I've said this over and over again, but Sachs has a really good grasp and a really good way of kind of explaining everything. And I think this is perhaps one of the finest pieces of video out there about Ukraine that there is. And this is cut, what is it? Cut 14, video 14. Bill Clinton's shadowy deep state project that really, I could add, that has put money in many people's pockets. Think about this. And by the way, CD04, if I said that right, you were right about the Middle East in your comment on the chat. I was watching that. You were correct with respect to how long things have been going on in the Middle East. And that's a tinderbox as well. And Hamas doing what they've done. And, oh, by the way, let's not forget about the 70 Christians who were beheaded in Africa. But again, I want to keep within the parameters, within the guardrails of the discussion. Because of time, we're just going to play a few minutes of this. This is Jeffrey Sachs about Ukraine. And watch the entire thing when you have a chance. Again, HagmanPI.com, and click on the link. This is, again, video 14. Or simply you can find it on, I think, social media, or perhaps... certainly social media, and if not, HagmanPI.com. Go ahead. Here's 14.
You know, yesterday was the most important day for peace in maybe decades, actually. This war in Ukraine resulted from a very bad idea of the United States taken in 1994. It's a project. The project was a project to expand NATO forever, anywhere. Just keep moving east. Keep moving not only to the first wave, which was the prime minister's country, Hungary, Czech Republic, and Slovakia, but then move eastward, closer to the former Soviet Union, into the former Soviet Union, surround Russia in the Black Sea region, go all the way to a little country in the South Caucasus, Georgia. It was mind-boggling. Clinton signed on to that in 1994. It became what we call the deep state project, meaning it didn't really matter who the president was. Each president would come and basically would be informed. NATO's moving eastward. You're part of that process. So Clinton started it in 1994. And as Prime Minister Orban said, he mentioned briefly, in 1990, on February 9th, 1990, in unequivocal, clear as can be terms, the United States had said to President Mikhail Gorbachev, NATO will not move one inch eastward. And if you have any doubt about it, all the documents are now online, available. You can scrutinize everything. Hans-Dietrich Genscher, the U.S., the German foreign minister, said the same thing same day. He's on tape, actually, explaining, no, I don't just mean within Eastern Germany. I mean anywhere to the east. Clinton, being Clinton, and the U.S. deep state being the U.S. deep state, started this project in 1994. They already had the idea, by the way, in 1991, 92, as soon as the Soviet Union ended. Aha, now we move. Now we move eastward. Now we control everything. Now we are the sole superpower. So this has gone on for 30 years. And each president got into it under George Bush Jr. Seven more countries were added, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Slovakia, Slovenia, Bulgaria, and Romania in 2004. Then in 2007, President Putin said at the summit that's taking place right now, the Munich Security Summit, said, stop. You told us no expansion, not an eastward expansion, even an inch, you said. You've now done 10 countries.
Stop. Perfectly reasonable. Stop. I don't think our president, Donald Trump, would much like to see China and Russia building their military bases up from Central America. You know, this was how the Russians saw this. Why are you coming to our border when you told us you weren't going to move? And there was one other thing that was very important in this, which is probably the most decisive thing and almost not even recognized. In 2002, the U.S. did something really, really, really destabilizing. And that is it unilaterally left the anti-ballistic missile treaty.
Okay, you
that was
right
a.
Think about this. Think about what happened in 2002. Folks, that goes on. And every minute, every part of that video, that interview is important. But think about the leaving of the anti-ballistic missile treaty, pulling out of that. Now, this is under Bush, but when did that really start? When did the rumblings of that begin? It began with the Lugar Commission, the Lugar Committee, whatever you want to call it. Richard Lugar. And who was part of the committee to oversee the drawdown of the nukes? As a junior senator from Illinois, Barack Hussein Obama. He was part of that. By the way, it was a left-right. Both parties were involved in that, which added to, which kind of set the stage, or at least lit a fuse, one of many, but that was a fuse, a big one, as he said, was really extremely important. But it began long before that. So Obama is a big part of this. And what was the consequence after the Maidan Revolution in, what was it, 2014, Victoria Nuland, and of course, Obama and Hillary Clinton? What was, when by the time Donald Trump got in office and was working his deals that included Russia and Ukraine, what was a big part of that? What happened? President Trump was impeached not once, but twice. Why was he impeached twice? What was the second impeachment about? It was over Ukraine. Biden wasn't impeached. It was Trump. That's why I pulled this. The title of this is Six Full Minutes. Let me see where I have it here. Six Full Minutes. Eric the Tech, do you see it anywhere?
No.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go to video nine.
Video nine.
Six minutes straight about... Well, it leads to Adam Schiff. And who's one of the most afraid people on the planet today, or in the U.S. today? With Bongino as acting, or deputy director of the FBI, Cash Patel as director of the FBI, Pam Bondi, Adam Schiff. Who pushed for impeachment? Let's go to video nine, and this will make sense to you. Cut nine.
He should resign from office in disgrace, and frankly, they should look at him for treason, because he is making up the words of the President of the United States. Not only words, but the meaning, and it's a disgrace. It should not be allowed to happen. Well, the whistleblower was very inaccurate. The whistleblower started this whole thing by writing a report on the conversation I had with the President of Ukraine. And the conversation was perfect. It couldn't have been nicer. I saw Rick Scott. I saw many of the senators talking about it, many of the congressmen talking about it. Not a thing wrong. Unless you heard the Adam Schiff version where he made up my conversation. He actually made it up. It should be criminal. It should be treasonous. He made it up, every word of it, made up, and read to Congress as though I said it. And I'll tell you what, he should be forced to resign from Congress. Adam Schiff, he's a lowlife. He should be forced to resign. He took a perfect conversation, realized he couldn't read it to Congress because it was a very nice conversation. I knew many people were on the phone. Not only were many people on the phone, we had stenographers on the phone taking it down word for word. He took that conversation, which was perfect. He said, I can't read this. So he made up a conversation and he reported it and said it to Congress and to the American people. And it was horrible what he said. And that was supposed to be coming from me, but it was all fabricated. He should resign from office in disgrace. And frankly, they should look at him for treason because he is making up the words of the president of the United States. Not only words, but the meaning. And it's a disgrace. It should not be allowed to happen.
Your own DNI said the call transcript was consistent with the complaint. So should...
No, he didn't say that. You have to take a look. No, he did not say that. And in fact, if you look at what he said, he found everything to be very normal. He's a good man. And Joe, and he found it to be very normal. I saw Schiff trying to go 15, you know, call him Shifty Schiff. We don't call him Shifty Schiff for nothing. He's a shifty, dishonest guy who, by the way, was critical of one of the great Secretary of States, graduated number one in his class at West Point, graduated one of the top in his class at Harvard Law School, the most honorable person, Mike Pompeo. And this guy was negative on Mike Pompeo. He can't, you know, there's an expression. He couldn't carry his blank strap. I won't say it because they'll say it was so terrible to say. But that guy couldn't carry his blank strap. You understand that? So you're dealing with bad people. And, you know, I watched China over the last few days, and I watched some of these other countries build up. And we built up more than anyone because of me. But no help from the Democrats. They're a disaster. Do nothing Democrats. They don't do any work. All they want to do is try and win the election in 2020. So they come up with this impeachment nonsense, and everyone knows. The conversation, all based on one phone call that I had, where I'm talking to the president of Ukraine. You'll hear from our ambassadors. You'll hear from some of the folks that know all about the call, why the call was set up, and everything else. It's perfect. The call was perfect.
I learned nothing.
All right. We cut that off at 3 minutes and 20 seconds, but he goes on. Again, 6 minutes worth of talk about Adam Schiff. But it's more than that. And I can tie things together. Again, I started out with the fact that we're involved in a counter revolution. Dan Bongino, his position, Cash Patel, obviously. And Bondi, like I mentioned, and the fact that there are people that within government that want to see President Trump and Musk dead, and the media's role in all of this. Hell, the media's role in the second Trump impeachment is second only to Adam Schiff. And in this book, not light reading, let me tell you, Provoked. The framing of President Trump with respect to Russiagate involving people like Strzok and Page and Mueller and Hillary Clinton, James Clapper, and you name it, all had tentacles to Ukraine. You think Russia... but think Ukraine as well. So here you have President Trump, who has really formed his army by way of his cabinet. You have a very incendiary, very fertile. I mean, think of the entirety of the U.S. being as dry as Los Angeles. with the winds just a blowing. Because you on both ends of the scale or the opposite ends, you've got some extreme intent to either keep or make America great again by ripping out these bureaucrats or lining pockets, staying in power, and feeding the war machine. Meanwhile, we're getting hit from the north, the south, the shores by treason conducted by the Bidens, the Clintons, the Obamas, and even people, the NGOs. You saw the fight we have against NGOs, the Soroses. I can go on and on and on. And then, of course, you have the idea that the fact is President Trump survived not one but two attempted assassinations, really one that was very close, and the second one was, what was that all about again? Russia, right? No, Ukraine. What I tried to do tonight was, from start to finish, give you an idea of where we're at today. A little bit of how we got here, but really where we're at. And the fact that we are facing some of the most dangerous times in American history. But we've been here before, to some extent or another. We've been here. We will get through this. Understand the bigger picture here. Understand that you know, you can't piss off Russia. Henry Kissinger talked about the relationship between Russia, U.S., and China. Even Kissinger, even that guy, realized, look, you can't piss off Russia because they're going to go run into China. But what did Biden do? Not one phone call in 4 years to Putin. And pissed off Russia every chance he got. We'll get through this. God is in control. But I'm going to tell you right now, it's going to be a rocky, rocky road that we face. The notes I have... Representative Wesley Hunt, I want to kind of close with this. Representative Wesley Hunt was on with Benny Johnson on his podcast. I think it was today. And he called out the Trump assassination attempt cover-up. We don't have time to play it. The cover-up. Perhaps right up there with the J6 pipe bomber, the events of January 6th with respect to Pelosi and the Capitol Police and the FBI. Maybe that's why the left, the communists, the embedded people in the U.S. are so fearful about the restructuring of the FBI. About the restructuring of the Department of National Intelligence. Maybe that's why. Because answers will be forthcoming. Folks, I hope that made sense. If it did, leave me a yes,